All right. They asked me if I had a PowerPoint. Well, yeah, I mean, like three slides. And the first slide is just the title, you know what I'm saying? So not exactly a PowerPoint, but, you know, you can't really get up in front of a group of adults without having a PowerPoint, so I thought I'd put something together. Okay, I was asked, I think on Thursday, would you be willing to do a thing on parenting for our church there in Fresno? I'm like, I guess. I don't feel like I'm an expert on parenting at all, but I did raise three teenagers. Okay, that qualifies me. And I've probably attended, I don't know, at least 10 parenting workshops over the years, so I might have learned a couple of things there. And maybe more of a qualification is either being a college student or being around college students for about 50 years consecutively, being a professor and campus minister. Maybe, I don't know, that might possibly be relevant. Yeah. So if my comments are helpful, great. If they're not, I'm sorry. Hopefully it'll be worthwhile. And like I'd say, you know, I don't think Jan and I are the world's number one example or even the number five example, but we've done what we could do. My comments will apply probably a bit more towards middle school, high school, just because that's the more recent experience for us, even though it's not all that recent, since my children are 38, 36, and 34. So we're doing the kind of the grandkid thing now, which that's okay. We could admit this, that raising preteens and teens, that's a tough job. Right, Amy? That's a tough job. There's the story of the preacher. He was a young preacher, and he was, you know, got a job working for a church, and they would have a parenting thing every 5 or 6 years. So first time out, he did this parenting thing, and the title of his talk was How to Raise Children. And then 5 or 6 years later, then he actually had children, you know, he and his wife, and so their kids were like elementary school, maybe second grade or third grade. So they did a new version of the class. And this time around, the title of the class was Advice for Raising Children. And then about, I don't know, 5 or 6 years later, his kids were now teenagers. And they did a new, like, parenting workshop for his church. This time the title was Hope for Parents. Yeah, because honestly, until I raised teenagers, I think I really didn't know anything. You know, I was almost without knowledge until having raised teenagers. So, but that's a great opportunity. You know, as we come into the middle school years and the teen years, we move away from maybe Proverbs 23, verse 13 and 14. You know, but that one about don't withhold discipline from a child. If you punish them with a rod, they will not die. That's not really what goes on when you got teenagers and preteens, right? Yeah. No, that probably wouldn't work. All right. Or, you know, and then there's Proverbs 22:6, which says, start a child or raise a child the way they should go, and they will not depart from it when they grow up, right? And I used to think, by the way, that was a promise, because it's in the Bible. It says it right there. I used to think that was a promise. But that is Proverbs. Actually, I'm preaching from Proverbs now. And that's not a promise, it's more of a principle. So it's not like, hey, if you do it right, then when your kids grow up, they're all going to be faithful disciples. That is not, just so you know, that is not promised in the Bible. That's a principle. And for sure, if you do it right, you dramatically increase the probability your kids will be faithful. In fact, one of our three has never been baptized, as these guys know, because they were her teen leader at the time. That's Liz. Yeah, she's doing pretty awesome as an adult person, very successful, but never been a disciple. But then, actually, I think we're moving on as we come into the middle school years and the teen years. A little bit more Ephesians 6:4. Let me read that one. Ephesians 6:4. Okay, it's a little bit warm in here. Not too bad. Not too bad. A couple summers ago, I was teaching in Togo, and it was probably about 95 degrees, no air conditioning, and like a tin roof kind of building there, you know, so maybe 100, 105 in that building. And they had me teaching for probably about 4 or 5 hours that day. So completely drenched so you could wring the water out of the shirt, then change it to another shirt. Why I bothered to change, I don't know. So this is the Ritz over here. All right, but Ephesians 6:4 says, fathers, how about parents? Okay, parents, don't exasperate your children. Instead, bring them up in the training and instruction of the Lord. And, you know, it's easy for children to get exasperated. Real easy. So, do teens want to learn from their parents? Well, actually, they really do. They desperately do. But they don't want to let you know it, that's for sure. They're going to do everything they can to prevent you from being deceived about the fact that they actually want to learn from you. You still are the person they're looking to the most. It's just, it doesn't look that way, as any parent of teens will tell you. Yes, absolutely, they want to learn from you. Do they want you to know that? Definitely not. So how do they do that? So I'm gonna give you one of these, you know, 8 suggestions, I guess, for raising, especially middle school and teen, but I think it applies to all parenting. But I want to remind you of what the goal is. Okay? What is the goal? John 20, verse 31. What is our goal as parents? If we forget the goal, we could get off track. We could do some good things, but not what God would want us to do. So here we go. I'm taking this a little bit out of context. He's definitely not talking about raising teenagers, but here we go. Jesus performed many other signs in the presence of his disciples, which are not recorded in this book, but these are written that you may believe that Jesus is the Messiah, the Son of God, and that by believing you may have life in his name. So the goal of parenting is that your children believe. We have to remember that. The goal of parenting is not that your children get into a good university. That is not the goal. The goal of parenting is not that your children become excellent athletes. All right? Not even that they necessarily have supermassive quantities of fun. In fact, pretty much everything that our society and culture tells us parenting is about and the goal of raising children is not what it's about. The goal is that they come to know Christ. And that's really the only goal. Now, some of those other things, if they come along at the same time, that's fine. But I think we forget that pretty easily. You know, and we're trying to, you know, maybe they get a scholarship somewhere. Well, what if they get a scholarship and go to hell? Or what if they totally bomb out, never even make it to college, and, you know, but become a Christian? And then as they grow older, they'll actually become fairly awesome, but maybe from a different perspective. So, no, the goal is not to have calm, confident, high self-image, obedient children. That obedience thing, which is, that's important, okay? Because learning to respect authority sets them up for learning to respect authority, okay? But having obedient children is definitely not the goal.
That's right.
Okay? It's not the goal. Is it part of what is part of the package, I guess, in a sense? So I'm not here to give you advice about how to have your kids obey you or be respectful, although I'm not saying that's not important. In fact, what did it say right before it said, children don't exasperate, you know, children are going to exasperate their parents. God didn't even bother to say, children don't exasperate your parents, because why even waste your time? But it did say, you know, children obey your parents in the Lord, which is the first, you know, commandment of the promise. Absolutely. Okay, so I want to talk just a few minutes, you know, like, I don't know, another 20 minutes or so, I guess, about some thoughts from my perspective of how we could help our children become believers. And guess who I'm going to talk about? I'm not going to talk about your children. I'm going to talk about you. Okay? Because that's all you can control anyway, right? That's all you can control. So I'll suggest a few things to think about in your parenting. Again, this applies definitely all levels of parenting, but I'm thinking more preteen and teen years, okay? Number one is humility. Okay? You will help your children more by just confessing your sins to them than just about anything you could do. Okay? You need to be teachable. Okay? Are you teachable? Do the people who are close to you, would they say, that person is open to suggestions and advice? Because don't you want your children to be that way? And so how do you help them to be that way? By telling them to be teachable? By telling them to ask you for advice? So I would say, your children need to see humble people. By the way, just, you know, this is not my specialty. As I'm talking to myself as much as anybody else, but there you go. 2 Chronicles 7:14. If my people who are called by my name will humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from wicked ways, then I will hear from heaven. I will forgive their sins and will heal their land. That's 2 Chronicles 7:14. So, got a question for you. Are you a humble person? And by the way, if the answer is no, that's not necessarily bad news. Because you know why that's not necessarily bad news? Because you could become more humble. Your children give you more credit for changing than they do for who or what you are. All right? I think that's what I've observed. That's my understanding. All right, so he says, and I will forgive their sins and it will heal their land. Their land for us is family. And so I suggest you consider next time you're doing a sin study or a repentance study, when you study out 2 Corinthians 7:8-11, that you apply it to yourself and ask, are my children seeing these things, right? What indignation, what alarm, what readiness to see justice done, right? What earnestness, eagerness to clear yourselves. Yeah. And if your children see that humility, they're going to be drawn to that. And they'll hopefully be humble. Okay, the second one of this list, I've got 8-part outline. Of these 8, the second one is the most obvious. It almost doesn't need to be said, but guess what? It needs to be said. Okay? It just does. How many times have you had lessons about, you know, having good quiet times? Why do we keep doing that? Well, because we don't do a very good job of it. So, again, and by the way, I think, as my and I children around the house, I think I did a fairly decent job of staying close to God. But what I think I didn't do a good enough job, in fact, I know I didn't do a good enough job, is having them see it. Okay? So I suggest that you have quiet times in a place in the house where your children can see you having a quiet time.
Right.
And I suggest, and again, if I were to rate myself for this at 1 to 10, I'd be a 3. I mean, I'm talking about what I didn't do rather than what I did do, honestly, as a parent. Let your teens see you and your children from the youngest age. I'd say a lot of parents say, what I want to do is I want to have quiet times with my teenagers. Good luck with that. I mean, if you have a teen like that, amen, praise the Lord, but you're the 10%. But I'm telling you, if they see you having like a meaningful, deeper, and they have to literally see it.
Yeah.
And like I said, I didn't do a good job of this at all, honestly, when my kids were growing up. I had my quiet times in my room or whatever. I know Gary, he's always out walking around and doing stuff like that. That's a great idea. All right. So that's point number 2. This is probably the most obvious point in my list, but I don't know. I just need to say it. Is we need to have a great relationship with God, but figure out a way that your children can know about that. You know, you don't want to shove too much Bible down their throat. You don't want to do that. So if you mentioned what scripture you read every single day, I'm not sure that's even what I'm talking about. It's just being this thing I'm talking about, and your children know it, okay? Point number three, and this is really point number one and point number two combined into one point, so that's point number three, which is parents changing, okay? You get absolutely zero credit with your kids for the changes that happened when you became a Christian. Absolutely zero. That counts. Maybe I'm exaggerating, but I don't think it gets you any points at all. Because they didn't see it. If they didn't see it, then what does it help? Alright? And so, that's why I said, if you struggle with pridefulness, and your kids know it, that's not necessarily, it's really bad in terms of God, but in terms of your kids, it's not actually as bad as you might think, because you could change. And children, I believe the little kids don't notice your change probably at all, but I think your middle schoolers, they're noticing it. Absolutely. So to me, helping your kids to become a Christian, and that is the goal, right? The goal is that they make it to heaven. All right. Getting baptized, okay, but getting to heaven, that's what I'm talking about. Is that you kind of have to go through the whole becoming a Christian thing again one more time. You know what I'm saying? It's like, you have to count the cost one more time. So they need to see the way Christianity, your relationship with God, is impacting you in the sense that you're becoming more like Christ. And there's a sense in which that's good news. Because the fact that you're not there yet, in terms of parenting, is actually not that bad. Okay? Point number four. This probably would be emphasized in any parenting workshop anyway, but again, I think I need to say it, is unity between the parents. By the way, that does not mean you agree. Alright? Because if the goal is for the parents to agree, then we might as well just end this workshop, and because that's not going to happen. I mean, I think we can approach agreement on many areas through talking, working it out. But we're not going to have exactly the same philosophy on parenting. What I mean by unity is they need to see a unified front. That doesn't mean they're not even aware of your differences. It just means, you know, when the rubber meets the road, they're going to get the same answer. Okay? In our parenting style, Jan and I had quite significantly different approaches, I would say. She'd be more the, you know, let's set the rules and make sure they're following it, and, you know, lots of, consequences, and definitely can't do that, and all that kind of stuff. I'm more like, well, you know, let them make mistakes, and, anyway, they'll learn from that. And, the opposites attract, you know what I'm saying? Probably it's good to have both kind of parents, you know, kind of. That's actually not necessarily a bad thing. But the bottom line is what we really tried, and I'd say we did a pretty good job in this area, maybe not great. You can ask these guys and they'll tell you because they watched it all happening. All right, our parenting of teens, they saw it all. They'll tell you. But I think when it came down to the kids trying to divide us, I don't think it worked, not very often. So I'd say work on your unity. This is from the earliest time. Okay? And so there's the kids are going to try to pit you against each other. They're just that sinful nature, and it's there. They're going to try. All right? They're going to try their best to pit you against each other, and it just has to not work. And when they're doing it to you, you might even want to point it out. You're trying to get me. No, that is not going to happen. So that's number four. All right. Number five. This is on my list, and to me, it's really important. You know, especially as we come into the middle school years, friendship and open communication. That's really Short of them becoming a Christian and going to heaven, having a relationship where you actually talk things through and open communication, that's, to me, is the key. So we want to see that happen. And so how do you do that? So my suggestion is, from early times, one-on-one time. We had three kids, so that's pretty tough. I got to have a one-on-one time pretty much every week with all three kids. Well, yeah. So don't have five kids, okay? Just don't do that, okay? Oh. Or have them, but then you just have to lower your standards here. Alright, so, for example, with my daughter Kate, we would go out to Starbucks every Monday, probably for 6 or 7 or 8 years, you know what I'm saying? And just hanging out together, and, you know, being in her clubs and that kind of stuff. Yeah, I would strongly suggest you do that. And then, basically, the idea is, we do homework, I'd work on a lesson, and she'd work on her homework, or we just talk and hang out, talk with the people that were there or whatever. But the idea is she just gets to talk. So this time you're with them, the idea is for them to talk. Then I'd get with my son and he wouldn't ever talk. Right. But we'd do our best, right? Yeah. So, and then when they're talking, just listen. Just listen. The goal is not to tell them how to deal with the problem. If they ask you how to deal with the problem, then I still would say ask them questions. Well, what do you think? And that kind of stuff. Because we're training them to be open and honest. And if they're open and honest, then I think we can help them. So please, when you have these dates or whatever, don't correct your children. Don't do that. Don't do that. There's times for that. All right? But that's not your fun time together, because if during your fun time together, you're correcting all the mistakes they made. And how could you do that, and why did you let that happen? You're just going to shut the whole thing down. Yeah. All right, so listening without correcting, not interrupting, letting them talk. But then you talk too. You know, you share what's going on in your life. You know, 70% of them talking, 30% of you talking, that's probably good. And talk about all kinds of stuff, you know, politics and history and sports and music, and try to listen to the music. Whatever you do, definitely don't judge their music. You know, that's not a bad thing. And reason things through. Help them to learn how to think things through. You know, in Isaiah 1:18, he said, you know, God even said to his people, come, let us reason together. So what you're doing is you're just helping them think through the stuff, talking about it, and then at some point, share how you think. Obviously, they want to hear that. I really believe that. I really believe they want to hear that. Anyway, so becoming a friend. Now, remember, you'll be a parent first and a friend second. Till the day you die, you're a parent first and a friend second. Okay? Because that's who you are. But that the role of that changes very significantly. But I'd say you need to be as close of friends with your kids as you possibly can. And that comes from hanging out and listening to them and letting them talk. Okay, number 7. See, it's number 6. Okay, yeah, it's number 6 on my outline and on this thing, which is just showing love. All right? How's the world going to know you're my disciples? By your love for one another. So how are you children are going to know that you're disciples? By your love for one another. And I would, on top of that list, I'd put hospitality. I would put hospitality right at the top of that one. Your house needs to be the hangout place. From the youngest time, the place in the neighborhood that the kings hang out should be at your house. If that means you have to, I don't know, get a ping pong table or a slidey, slippy, slidey thing, or I would say food works every time. A full refrigerator, healthy, but, you know, not too healthy. All right? So, that's one thing that I would say on this list. I'll go through this. We did okay, not so great, honestly. On this one, Jen and I, we did pretty amazing the whole time, I think. And our kids were always hanging out at our house, as were their friends. And I remember one time I came home unexpectedly during the middle of high school, and my daughter was hanging out at our house with her friends. They were skipping school, and so I chased them out of the house and called the narc on them at the school and got them in big trouble. But, all right, so that kind of hospitality.
Karen first.
Yeah. I was laughing the whole time. I was pretending I was really angry, but I was laughing the whole time. I thought it was so funny. Because our house was right near the school, so I was, Anyway, so have people in general, all kinds of people, old people, young people, black, white, every color, every culture. Just, your house should be a place where everybody wants to be. Alright? And that means your house might be dirty. And it might have stuff broken. I remember one of my son's friend, he was around our house so much that when we bought a new couch, we had him check it out to make sure it was okay. Because actually the reason we had to buy a couch is because Ben's friends were over and they jumped on it and they cracked it in half. Alright? So I'd say that's another thing about parenting is just, and by the way, serving the community. You need to be doing that. And if you can get your kids to be involved in that, that would be absolutely awesome. Yeah, serving the community. For our kids, I remember when, Ben was probably, they were like 9th grade, 7th grade, and 5th grade, maybe something like that, maybe 10th, 8th, and 6th. We took them on a 3-week trip to Mexico City, and we served at Hope Sites, and it was pretty crazy. Our kids were crying. It was pretty radical. But that was really key, I think, is just for them to see our family. We go out and we serve people. Did they enjoy the whole thing? No. But that is a really fond memory for sure. Alright, point number 7. This is something that you are set up for like big time here is because you have a lot more college students than you have middle school and teenage, right? I think so. Yeah, I was there last night. They were trying to school me on the basketball court, but who's that guy in your church who can shoot from like 20 feet? That's not fair. That's not fair. All right. So anyway, just somehow or other, get your preteens, definitely start, maybe even earlier, I don't know, in a relationship with a college student. Absolutely. And if that means you feed that college student, there was one college student who was at our house for dinner, I think for about 3 or 4 years every Monday. And I was actually helping him with his physics and his engineering and stuff like that. But then he's hanging out with our kids. So I would say get your kids in a relationship with a cool college student or maybe single possibly, or even a more mature high school student. Do that. All right. I said I'm going to talk for not very long. Which, that's true, I'm going to talk for probably only half an hour. So I've got one more point, which is prayer. Okay? Need I say more? Alright, but I'll read Galatians 6 verse 9. I assume you pray for your kids every day. I mean, I assume that goes without saying. I assume so. But I would just say pray, and maybe you can make a habit of fasting for your children on a regular basis, whatever it is. Because we need help from God in this area. We really do. We really do. So this is one of my favorite scriptures. I remember it often. It says, let us not become weary in doing good. That definitely applies to parenting from the youngest baby all the way through. How many of you get tired from being a parent? Yeah. Oh, you don't. Oh, good for you. You're putting us in be parents. Why are you even? Just kidding. You didn't raise your hand, but I'm sure you do. It says, let us not become weary in doing good, for at the proper time we'll reap a harvest if we do not give up. Now, I'm not here to give you a promise this morning that if you do these things, all of your children will absolutely be disciples and will go to heaven. I'd like to give the promise, but I can't. But I do believe that in all of your children's lives, you will reap a harvest. If you'll do these things and the things that weren't happen to be on my list. So let me remind you, humility and becoming more humble than you were before. Repentance. Your children actually seeing you apologizing to them and to other people. Parents, just bottom line, who have a close relationship with God, and it's visible. It can be seen around the house. Parents who actually change. Parents whose lives are impacted on an ongoing basis, and the children can see that. Unity between the parents, that does not equal agreeing on things necessarily, but it means that they cannot produce division between you. Okay, friendship with the children, just hangout time, just weekly. Okay, relationships that they have. Oh, wait, hospitality, relationships that they have with spiritual teens in campus, and prayer. That's my outline. And we could do a little Q&A thing if you'd like. Yes, no, maybe you're going to have other Q&A. I actually ended a little bit early, which that's good, because the next thing's at 3, correct?
What do you want to do, buddy? Yeah, I mean, take a few. Yeah.
5 minutes. Comments or questions? Yeah.
You mentioned you had 2 that were disciples and 1 is not. Did you think you did anything different in any of their lives?
We did things different because they were different. I mean, in that sense. Yeah, our middle one was the one who was out to test us from the very beginning. Oh my goodness. She ended up going to the school for the bad kids. That's how bad it got. I mean, yeah, she did. She literally went to the school for the bad kids. Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, several years ago she said to Jen, well, I was really bad, wasn't I? Like, yeah. And so, no, we did not treat them the same because we couldn't. You know, I mean, by the time she was in 9th grade, her idea of a boyfriend would be somebody who was like from the hood. That's what she wanted. That was a form of rebellion. So, no, we didn't. I'm a scientist. I like to think cause and effect. You know, if this, this worked, you know, you did this and did it. I can't answer that question. I really can't answer that question. No, we did not treat them exactly the same because they were significantly different. We had 2 kids who they're kids, but they're never a problem. Those are the 2 who ended up being baptized. And then we had a 3rd one who scratch her head sometimes. By the way, today, although she's never been baptized, she's the most responsible of the 3. She's has a very strong sense of morality and ethics. And, but, so she's, you know, she's the complete opposite of what she was then. So I don't think I gave you a very good answer to your question. People say I treated them all the same. We did not treat our kids all the same because we couldn't. I mean, for our son, he would never open up about anything, even now. I mean, he just doesn't open up. So how do you have these wonderful, awesome, deep, you know, conversations about life? We did our best. Whereas our youngest, she would just talk and talk and talk. So, I don't think we did a worse job with Liz, but it was very challenging. I'm guessing we probably made more mistakes with her just because we were put to the test more by her. And, you know, there's things I regret about how we handled that situation. Yeah. Because that put more stress on our marriage. That was the toughest time in our marriage. Honestly, when when our middle one was going through that stuff, it was tough. Yeah.
What's the age gap between your kids?
Oh, I'm a scientist, so we do everything very scientifically, right? So. Every 2 years, right? 38, 36, 34. Yeah. 2 years apart. Boy, girl, girl. Yeah.
I'd like to ask a question about college age.
Yeah.
Since you're here. Pretty soon we're going to be we're going to be empty nesters.
Oh, good. Congratulations. Good luck maintaining that, though.
Campus minister and someone who's there, you know, I don't know, they're doing this kid's life. life. What's your advice about being a good parent at that stage to support them and remain spiritual while you're far away?
Yeah, I think the main thing is to support them. That's the main thing you're doing is just supporting them.
With money? Okay.
Oh. There's different philosophies on, you know, that's a real thing. I mean, seriously. How much do you help them out financially? I'm not sure that that determines whether they're going to go to heaven or not, but it does determine the kind of person they become. I'd say, training them to be independent sooner instead of later, absolutely. And so by the time they're in their college years, you know, it's mainly them asking you, and you just have to let it happen. Hovering over that age, people that age, it just doesn't work. There's a situation in our church where there's a parent who's trying to tell the kid what to do and give him advice constantly. I'm like, stop doing that. They're going to do the exact opposite. So again, by the time they're in college, you're still their parent, but it's reached the point where you ask a lot of questions maybe and, you know, hope they'll seek advice, but unsolicited advice tends to be rejected. By the time the kids get into their 20s and 30s, unsolicited advice might actually possibly be an okay thing. But there's something about the 18 to 25-year-old that unsolicited advice tends to actually boomerang and not work out. By the way, we are empty nesters, literally, but the way we became that is by moving to Bakersfield.
Someone's got to move
that. Yeah. That was a guaranteed means to become an empty nester. But then they were still living in our nest. So the way we got out of that is we sold the house. That's our third. Our other children, they wanted to be independent. They always wanted to be independent. And we raised kids that felt good about being independent of their parents. All right, that's the strength, I think, of our parenting style. Our oldest, he just wanted to kind of hang out with us, which it was nice. I mean, it was cool having around the house, but at some point, you know.
Yeah. So we have an 8-year-old. I'd say he's pretty precocious.
He's pretty
precocious.
Okay.
Dealing with someone older. Something I'm realizing is I feel like I'm reacting a lot to things that I didn't like about how I was parented. And two in particular is I feel like there's a lot of black and white thinking. There's a lot of, like, absolutes.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of me that I feel like was unacceptable, and I had to hide. Like, in order to be loved, I had to perform or be good enough. And so,
that's
even
tough.
Though, and this is all stuff I figured out much later, but even though he's young, I wrestle with anything that smacks with that. So, like, he'll talk sometime at night about, like, you know, doubts or questions about the Bible or God. And I can feel like my, you know, my Christian duty to be like, no, you know, there's all these answers. But honestly, sometimes he asks a good question, like, I don't know, you know? And I'm more inclined to tell him, like, I don't know. And that's like, am I a bad parent? Or, like,
wow.
You know, if I'm of an age where I have parents or, you know, friends and connections to where their kids grew up in the church but are coming around one day and they're into drugs or sleeping around or whatever, and the parents handle it different ways. And I feel like my first reaction, you know, you want to, like, somehow make them stop, but my first reaction would be, like, I want you to know your love before anything else. And again, I can wrestle with, like, am I doing a good job now? Like, should I, how do you introduce something that's like, yeah, this is sin, but also, like, if you're ever into this, it doesn't mean you're done. It doesn't mean we're over.
I think up to the age of about somewhere between 8 and 10, the children probably need to have a pretty darn strong sense of there's right and wrong and a fairly black and white worldview for them is probably going to give them a sense of security and safety.
Yeah.
But then somewhere between 9, 10, 11, 12, you have to pretty much almost turn a switch on that. And they have to, you have to train them to be able to accept other ideas.
Yeah.
And about the worst thing you could ever do is shut them down for expressing a doubt. That should be the biggest no-no ever. All right? Because I've done a lot of Christian evidence stuff with teenagers, and I say, And we did one, wasn't it here? We did a thing for the teens and the parents wanted to come. Where that was recent. We did it. And I said, no, the teens are not, the parents are not allowed here. Get out of here because I want to talk about doubts and stuff like that. And the parents are wanting, oh no, that, why would you ever think that? Oh my goodness. And that's just not going to help.
Yeah.
So if the thing is, your kids need to know that you have very strong convictions and you're not, you know, that's fine. But then shutting down their investigations of other ways of thinking is, that's, just don't do it.
Yeah. I mean, the hard thing is,
even the sexual areas, you know, and it was so much easier when we were raising kids. It's really tough now. But I'd say if you just come down, wham, that's not going to happen in this house. First of all, they're probably going to actually do it just because you did that. So having strong convictions, being able to handle black and white. So there's going to be a pretty hard transition, I think. Sorry, 8, 9, 10, 11, to where their mind's going to open up and you just have to watch it happen. Okay? That's my advice. Yeah, I'm sorry you were raised under that kind of, that's really tough. That's really tough. Yeah, kids need to be accepted. That doesn't mean everything's okay. But they're okay. I mean, that they are loved and that they can't lose that love even if they do something that you really, really strongly disagree with. That love is going to be there no matter what. Yeah, they should know that. Okay, yeah. Last one because it's...
So you had said to confess sin to your kids. Yeah, I think it's hard when, you know, as the dad trying to project, like, you know, I'm a solid rock here, you know, and you can count on me, rain, sleet, snow, whatever, like I'm always here. To reconcile that with, man, I'm really struggling with this. And not that I'm going to confess all my sin to my kids, but if it impacts them and it's relevant to them, like, do you have any practicals on what that's about, like what you did?
First of all, obviously, you're not going to share every aspect of sin with your kid. Obviously not. But isn't that part of what you've said, talking about being a rock? Isn't that part of what makes you a rock?
Yeah.
That you're not perfect and you can be honest about your sins and mistakes? Isn't that strength? Whoever gave the idea that, you know, coming across as perfect or, you know, that doesn't show strength to me at all. So I don't see that dichotomy. I just say, first of all, they're going to see your sin. I mean, your kids know your sin better than anybody else. So basically all you're doing is talking about what they already know. So I just don't see the issue you're bringing up personally as being an issue. Okay, there are kinds of sins that probably you're not going to talk with your daughter about, you know, tell her, yeah, I was lusting after this woman. You're not going to share that obviously with your son. I think you could. In fact, I think you actually should. Yeah. Okay. Anyway, we're done? Is this basket for me? Okay, wow. That's way too much. Hopefully it was helpful.
Thank you so much, bro. Obviously, we can just stay here and just keep asking questions. I know I had to put my wife's hand down a couple of times. But on behalf of the Fresno Church.
Thank you.
We have some
wow.
Fresno State products here. Fresno
you guys grow corn?
Corn right here. Yeah. Some tomatoes. Right, and some wine right there to help for the stuff.
Thank you.
You know what I'm saying? That's what they say. And a little gift card as well. So thank you so
wow,
much,
that's,
bro.
Wow.
Appreciate it.
Yeah. Thank you.
I'll leave it right here, please.
Thank you. All right, so are we on to the next class? Or?
Yeah, next class. Can I step in?
Yeah, go for it. I'm going to talk about the next class.
So Dave and Jan Banks were going to be our guest speakers, and they got COVID. And I called John like Thursday,
right?
2 days ago. And asked if he would do this.
Yeah.
Did you already
cover that, bro?
We covered that, bro.
We're good. So I just wanted to personally say thank you.
Awesome. You're welcome.
Okay.
No problem.
But to piggyback off